It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
All right. Well, good morning. Welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. How are we doing this morning? Pour yourself another cup of coffee if you're at home, or if you're on your way to play some golf, or on your way here to the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, or whatever you're doing. I'm glad you're listening. We'll be talking golf every Sunday from 7 to 8 in the morning through September 2nd. And I want this show to include all aspects of the game and appeal to men, women, all ability levels, ages. Each week, I hope to bring you interesting personalities in the game to talk about the sport that we are so passionate about. And on the weeks where I'm covering a major championship, like this weekend here at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, I will devote the entire hour to this championship with guests from here. On other Sundays where I'm not physically at a tournament, I will talk about the LPGA Tour, the Champions Tour, the PGA Tour, amateur golf, celebrity golf, news about various issues in golf, et cetera, et cetera. There's so much to talk about, and so we'll try to cover as much as we can in only 1 hour each Sunday morning. So, well, many of you may remember me from my Hey Liguori, What's the Story days, and that started the very first weekend the station went on the air back in 1987 and aired every weekend for a very long time. And I hope to hear from some of my old friends who perhaps listened to that show through the years, and from new friends as well throughout this summer. And it's great to hear John Minko doing updates this morning. A true legend, Johnny, another original. So we're really looking forward to doing the show. And happy Father's Day. What a beautiful day it will be. And I wish all of you an incredible day. And if you're blessed to have your dad with you, enjoy it. Enjoy it. Well, anyway, this morning we have plenty to talk about. So just when you thought that this championship was going to be all Dustin Johnson, with DJ perhaps dominating the weekend after taking a four-shot lead into the third round, well, that didn't happen. But who, in their wildest dreams, thought that the storylines in round three would involve one of the most popular figures in the game, in addition to yet another controversy here at Shinnecock regarding the condition of the golf course and losing several greens due to the winds that picked up in the afternoon yesterday? So Phil, you know, was enjoying the reception he got all day yesterday. New Yorkers wishing him happy birthday. After all, he turned 48 yesterday, and his fans were actually singing happy birthday to him. And he was smiling, feeling fine. And, you know, he seemed just happy to make the cut after posting a 69 on Friday, after he struggled, like many of the top players, in Thursday's high winds with a round of 77. So Phil birdies the par 4 fourth, but follows that up with a bogey on the par 5 fifth. Then he bogeys number 8, number 9, number 10, number 11. He pars 12. He's playing with Andrew Johnston, beef. So how fun is that? You know, the two of those guys playing together. And then he gets to the par 4 13th, and he has a 25-foot downhill bogey putt. And the ball misses the cup and just keeps going. And then he starts chasing the ball, and when he catches up to the ball, he whacks it back up the hill while it's still moving, and the ball passes the hole again. So then he misses the next putt going back. He finally taps in for an 8 that became a 10 with a 2-stroke penalty that he was assessed. And, you know, you're just like wondering what is going on. I mean, his playing partner, Beef, he started laughing and afterwards called it a moment of madness. Phil ended up carding a plus 1181, a plus 17 for the championship. He said afterwards he knew about the 2-stroke penalty rule of hitting a moving ball and that he meant to take advantage of the rules as best as he could. I mean, when I saw Phil running after that putt and hitting it back toward the hole while the ball was still moving, I almost fell out of my chair. I'm wondering, has this guy lost his mind? It was unbelievable. Was he having a meltdown? I mean, I know it's frustrating out there, but I mean, how do you do this? in the U.S. Open in a major championship anytime, but particularly in a U.S. Open. You know, his members of his family had flown in to watch. The whole world, you know, was watching. All the, you know, millions of fans on TV watching. All these fans, you know, who idolized him. And you're just wondering what's going through his mind. Well, anyway, he was assessed a two-shot penalty, breaching Rule 14-5. And the debate then ensued as to whether Phil should have been disqualified under Rule 33-7-1-2. But the USGA said afterwards he did not deflect or stop the ball, so they only applied the two-shot penalty under the Rule 14-5. And then you have Mike Davis, the CEO of the USGA, saying after the round that Phil actually called him personally and wanted to actually understand the ruling. He apparently told Davis that he didn't want to play in this championship if he should have been disqualified. And Davis assured him that the USGA made the appropriate ruling. And then apparently Phil had talked to some other people and said that it was indeed not his finest moment. Well, hello. I mean, how does somebody who has become really an outer spokesperson, you know, of the game, if you will, five-time major champion, one of the most popular players on the tour, how does he disrespect the game like that? You know, as I said, it's the U.S. Open. It's our country's championship. So many people watching. You know, I like Phil. I really do. I had a wonderful conversation with him this past Monday night at the Rolex party. I was fortunate to get an invite. And Phil's the kind of guy that, you know, once he meets you, he will never forget your name. He will call you by your first name. When you're in a press conference and you ask a question, he will address you. He'll just remember your name, which is an incredible thing to do. He's very personable. You know, some people think he should run for office. He's a family man. He always makes sure to put his family first. Last year, he didn't even play the U.S. Open so he could attend his daughter's graduation. So you really don't expect this kind of behavior from anyone at a U.S. Open, particularly a player that so many people look up to. And then to hear his reaction even made it worse. Here's Phil talking to the media after the debacle on 13.
I was going to go down into the same spot behind the bunker, wasn't going to have a shot. And I don't know if I would have been able to save a shot or whatnot, but I know it's a two-shot penalty hitting a moving ball. I tried to hit as close to the hole as I could to make the next one. And, you know, you take the two shots, you move on. I don't mean disrespect by anybody. I know it's a two-shot penalty. And at that time, I just didn't feel like going back and forth and hitting the same shot over. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on. It's my understanding of the rules. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to do that. I just finally did. I don't mean it in any disrespect, and if that's the way people took it, I apologize to them, but that's not the way it was taken. I took the two-shot penalty, moved on, and there's not much more to say. It's certainly not meant that way. It's meant to, you know, take advantage of the rules as best as you can, and in that situation, it was just going. I was just going back and forth, and I would gladly take the two shots over continuing that display.
Wow. I mean, it's just not right. Phil apologized to anyone who was offended by what he did. And then he said something else, and you didn't hear it in those previous cuts. But then he said, toughen up. And when he said toughen up, that even made it worse. I mean, you know, what's also troublesome is that he decided that the next shot was going to be harder than penalizing himself. And you know, he tried to laugh it off, make light of it, but I do believe that this moment of insanity or meltdown or whatever happened inside his head to cause him to do this will really scar his legendary status in golf. I do believe it. He obviously just lost his head for a moment, and I'm sure if he had a chance to do it over again, he wouldn't, even if he doesn't admit that. So anyway, if that episode wasn't enough, then later in the day, more controversy erupted when the greens became too tough in the afternoon when the winds picked up. Now, players were not happy. You've heard many players speak out about it already. Many spoke of their displeasure. Zach Johnson told Sky Sports, in quotes, they've lost the golf course. The golf course is gone. And after the third round ended, The USGA admitted they just missed it with the wind. The conditions became too tough. They got more wind than expected. They said they would slow the greens down for today's final round. And they actually came into the press conference area yesterday. Mike Davis, the CEO of the USGA, said in quotes, "Listen, I think everybody, without stating the obvious, it was a tale of two different golf courses today. Even the first 2 days. If you look at how the golf course played the morning round, the morning wave versus the afternoon wave, it was significant. Reply different in those days as well." He said, "You know, the team that sets it up, there's about eight of us, part of the setup team that does the U.S. Open." He says, "I will tell you that we felt good about the setup when we left this morning. When we were done with the setup, we felt that it would work well given the forecast we had. But I think that now that I'm sitting here, we would say that parts of this test of golf simply were too tough." He went on to say, "We want the U.S. Open to be tough, but we saw some examples late in the day where well-executed shots were not only being rewarded, but in some cases penalized." And specifically, he said, "I think the one that was the most troublesome was the 15th green, that whole location. It worked fine most of the day, but it didn't work, you know, fine later in the day." Anyway, he went on and on. And yeah, I mean, definitely there were, I looked at the pin locations when I came in yesterday morning, and a lot of the pin locations were a couple feet from the edge. I mean, I looked at 15, that was almost impossible. 16, 14, really, really, really tough. And just so close to the edge of the green. I knew it was going to be a tough day just by looking at the pin placements. And then when you factor in, you know, that there's always wind here, and, you know, the forecast did call for, you know, 20-mile-hour gusts later in the afternoon, you have to wonder why those pin placements were just so difficult. All right, well, amongst all this controversy, we do have a championship taking place where the focus should be on the players competing. Dustin Johnson, he actually three-putted the 18th green late yesterday afternoon to drop out of the sole lead and join Daniel Berger, Tony Finau, and Brooks Koepka at +3 for the championship. And, boy, that 3 over 213 is the highest 54-hole score to lead the U.S. Open since 1974. And it was the first time since 2007, the U.S. Open at Oakmont, that no one is under par going into this final round. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back from the break, Gary Van Sickle, longtime golf journalist, Morning Read contributor, president of the Golf Writers Association of America, will join us. Dave Marr will join us later in the show as well. So stay where you are. And we'll be right back talking golf with Ann Liguori.
The 2018 U.S. Open Tennis Championships. Built to thrill and amaze. Dazzle and delight. Built on grit and greatness. Glitz and glamour. Built for the party. Built for the fans. Built for the future. Built for glory. Celebrating 50 years of the U.S. Open Tennis Championships, August 27th through September 9th. Tickets on sale now at usopen.org.
Looking for a snack on a low-carb diet? Grab a bag of Parm Crisps. Parm Crisps are all-natural crackers made from 100% cheese. Add Parm Crisps to your soup or salad, pair it with wine, or enjoy them straight out of the bag. Parm Crisps are rich in protein and have 0 grams of carbs. That's right, 0 carbs. Try Parm Crisps in original, jalapeno, or black sesame flavors. Now available at your local ShopRite. Sophisticated snacking never tasted so good.
Pave the way to a new walkway. Take the steps to a new stone patio. The Home Depot makes landscaping easier than you ever imagined. Start with handy how-to videos and easy-to-follow project guides. Bulk pricing gives you more for less, and delivery options bring it all home, literally. Better make a path to the Home Depot. Start your landscaping project with a trip to a store near you or visit homedepot.com/landscaping. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
I'm a one-trick pony. Literally. I show up at kids' parties and act cute. That's pretty much it. So excuse me for being bitter when Geico says not only could we save you money on car insurance, but we do more. Like give you 24/7 access online, over the phone, or even via our award-winning mobile app. Well, ooh la la. Aren't they multi-talented? Hey, I said organic carrots.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. your AC stops blowing cold air, find relief during Murray AC Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. While you may need to eventually have your AC professionally serviced, O'Reilly Auto Parts has special offers on the items you need to bring the cool back now. Everything from AC compressors to refrigerant. Don't miss Murray AC Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
According to this map, I'm close to the lost treasure. I just need to scale up that mountain, sneak past the Komodo dragons, and find a way to stop sinking in this quicksand. You know, on second thought, maybe I should just go play Take 5 from the New York Lottery. At least I'll have a 1 in 9 chance of winning. If I can just get that orangutan over there to toss me a vine so I can pull myself out. Here, orangutan, orangutan, orangutan. Here, orangutan.
Go for the win. With 1 in 9 odds, Take 5 from the New York Lottery is your daily chance to win great cash prizes. Must be 18 or older to purchase a lottery ticket. Please play responsibly.
Good morning at 7:20. This is John Minko. Here's what's going on. Final round of the U.S. Open at Southampton later on today. And there's a four-way tie for the lead. Dustin Johnson, Bruce Koepka, Tony Finau, and Daniel Berger all at 3 over par. Mets and Diamondbacks later on this afternoon in Arizona. Mets with the 5-1 victory last night. Michael Conforto had a home run. He drove in fours, supporting Steven Matz, picks up the victory. 6 2/3 of one-run ball. He picks up the win, and it'll be Zach Wheeler, the Mets starter, later on this afternoon. Meantime, it's Old Timers Day at the stadium. Susan and Sweeney live from the stadium shortly after 11 o'clock this morning. CC Sabathia will make the start today. Yankee pregame on the Fan at 1:25. First pitch at 2:05. Yanks with the 4-1 victory yesterday. Yanks have won 13-16. Luis Severino with win number 10. Back-to-back home runs. Giancarlo Stanton, Gary Sanchez, Aroldis Chapman with the save as the Yanks go for the series sweep today. The Rays have just one run scored in their last 21 innings. Meantime, second straight win for the Mariners over Boston. Seattle wins it 1-0. 7 2/3 for Wade LeBlanc, Nelson Cruz, the RBI single. And the Astros continue to roll right along. Half game lead on Seattle in the American League West. The Astros have won 10 straight as they beat the Royals 10-2. Elsewhere on the scoreboard, Tigers 7-5 on the White Sox. The Angels fall to Oakland 6-4. Twins outscore the Indians 9-3. Eddie Rosario 4-4 and a home run for Minnesota. Rangers 5, Rockies 2. The Marlins beat Baltimore 5-4. Blue Jays blank the Nationals 2-0. Max Scherzer has lost consecutive starts for the first time in nearly 3 years. Pirates 6-2 on the Reds. The Brewers fall to the Phillies 4-1. Braves blanking San Diego 1-0. Cubs 6-3. The Dodgers dumping the Giants 3-1. With reports every 20 minutes, this is John Minko, WFAN 2020 Sports.
It's the 118th U.S. Open, and this year the world's greatest golfers will be teeing off at Shinnecock on Long Island. Hi, this is Anne Liguori. Listen to my hourly updates continuing today, exclusively on your flagship station for golf's biggest events, The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM, and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN FM, New York. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. So glad to be with you on this Sunday morning from 7 to 8. And I'll be with you every Sunday morning from 7 to 8, Talking Golf, until September 2nd. So hope you'll join us and have some fun with us on this early morning. The number to call is 877-337-6666. 877-337-6666. Join in on our golf discussion. Would love to hear from you. And joining us now is longtime friend, a Morning Read contributor, president of the Golf Writers Association of America, Gary Van Sickle. Good morning, Gary.
How's it going? You ready for Sunday?
Well, is there a golf championship going on here? I mean, there was so much controversy, you know, yesterday with Phil's antics and the course getting dried out and almost impossible in the afternoon with the high winds. It was really difficult to focus on the actual players and the competition.
You know, that's what's wrong with the U.S. Open. Nothing ever happens on Saturday. You know, all the drama's for Sunday. Saturday's kind of a snooze. You don't even have to watch it because nothing goes on. You know, it's a shame because really no matter how it turns out, the outcome has already been inevitably altered. And, you know, if you think about Dustin Johnson, for instance, he got the bad late time Thursday, the early time Friday. The morning Friday, Thursday, and the late afternoon Friday times probably had a four shots easier. And now Dustin Johnson plays in the last group on Saturday, and it's the equivalent of another 4 to 6 shot penalty. I mean, this guy's, you know, 8 to 10 shots behind where he should be. So they messed that up, and then you had Mickelson doing his thing. Really, this was already as bad as 2004 and maybe worse. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure tonight we'll have a different story. We'll be talking about somebody who won the tournament and did something dramatic to win it. But it was so long and it still seems like yesterday. Yesterday's fiasco is something we're not going to forget for a while, and I think Mickelson's actions and his subsequent comments will really may never be forgotten.
Well, let's start with Phil Mickelson. I mean, how can somebody of his stature, right, just lose it like that and think it's funny and then say toughen up and really make a mockery of this U.S. Open? I mean, I like Phil, and I had the pleasure of talking with him at a party on Monday night, and he's just so personable, and he's somebody who's so, you know, just knowledgeable about the history of the game. And, you know, I think it's out of character. Maybe others don't. But your thoughts on his antics on the debacle on 13?
Well, it reminded me, you know, you can look at it a lot of ways, but it reminded me when that putt's rolling by the hole, it just seemed like he was a 9-year-old kind of whining that, well, I'm never going to win a U.S. Open. And he bats the ball. But it was obviously, here's the problem, it was calculated. I mean, he defended it like, oh, it was a smart play. It's in the rules. Well, the rules of golf really don't allow for things like that. You know, the rule that they applied, the USGA, as Brandel Chambly said on Golf Channel, the USGA gave him a birthday present by not DQing him, which he should have been DQ'd. You know, the rule about hitting a ball, a moving ball, is about hitting a moving ball accidentally. What Phil did was intentionally alter the course of the ball to save himself shots, and then he tries to rationalize it by saying, gee, guys in Augusta on the 15th green, if the ball's going in the pond, should run over and start batting that back. I mean, that's just inexcusable. Obviously, the rule says you can't, if you gain a significant advantage by doing something like that, the committee has the right to DQ you under Rule 1-2, and the USGA didn't want to do that. And I think that's an admission, because not only do they like Phil, but it's an admission that he did that because we lost the course. He did that because we lost the greens again, and he was angry. So, you know, it really bothered me that John Bodenhamer, the head of the rules committee, or I'm not sure what his title was, but he was asked a question. You know, the rules say if Phil had simply stopped the ball with his putter and just put it down and stopped it, he probably would have been DQ'd. How is hitting a moving ball better than stopping it? You know, and John was asked that and said, well, if he'd stopped it, would he have been DQ'd? And John Bodenhamer says, oh, well, I don't deal in hypotheticals.
Right, exactly.
You know,
he said
the same thing on TV. He wouldn't answer the question. And when anybody doesn't answer the question, it makes him look guilty and complicit. And Phil's comments about toughen up, I mean, on top of that, he gave a bogus story, and then he's arrogant on top of it. I mean, I don't know how big of a Phil Mickelson fan you have to be to sit there and think this was all right, but it was not all right. I haven't seen any significant player, any significant journalist say it was all right. I know there's two Rick Riley and Ian O'Connor said Phil should withdraw today. I know they're not the keepers of the flame, but they're two significant guys who, you know, who are not just looking for publicity. So it's a shame all around, and Phil kind of stole all the headlines today when we should be talking about we've got four guys tied to the lead for an exciting finish. And we're still talking about why Phil didn't get DQ'd. You know, it's a shame.
And some of the mentality out there I've heard is that he was so far out of the tournament that it's okay. You know, I've heard that from some very respected voices in golf, and I almost dropped out of my chair when I heard that reasoning. That is not okay in any tournament, let alone a U.S. Open championship.
You know, there's nothing in the rule book that says what the situation is. You know, I had this discussion last night with somebody and said, yeah, he's out of it. It's like, It's not about that. It's about the rule. In fact, the rule isn't necessarily applied to tournament golf. I'm just out playing by myself. It doesn't matter what my score is, where I stand. I'm not supposed to break the rules. And to allow that and to let it slide, again, I think it goes to the fact that the USGA goes, well, it's kind of our fault because we made the greens this way. And I'm sure that was part of Phil's thinking was, well, I'm having a bad weekend. I'm not going to win the Open. I said earlier in the week that they messed up, and I'm going to put an exclamation point on my stance that the USGA doesn't do things the way I would do them. Therefore, I'm going to embarrass them. But really, all he did was embarrass himself.
Well, it will be interesting to see, how the greens on that controversial topic, how the greens respond today. I mean, you can only water the greens so much, Gary. They're going to have wind this afternoon as well. They're very, they watered it last night. How do you prevent it from really getting out of hand?
Well, that's a great question. I thought they figured it out Thursday and Friday. They were afraid there was going to be a lot of wind, so. I didn't talk to the agronomy staff on this, but it looked like the greens were longer. They didn't mow them as short because if they got big wind, the ball would be moving around. Yesterday, from the first group out, you're going, holy heck, what happened? It looked like they rolled them, triple rolled them three times. I mean, they had a gloss early in the morning, and they were much, much faster. Now, they said, the wind caught us by surprise. No, the weather forecast was in the afternoon was exactly what it said it was in the morning. It said it was going to get breezy up to maybe 20 miles an hour.
I remember reading the forecast in the morning.
Yeah, the USGA had it on the slip in the press room. You can pick up today's notes, and here's the forecast. They knew what the weather was going to be. So for them to say we got surprised is not being truthful, in my opinion. So, look, you raise the blades in the mower, and that's why those putts were bouncy on Thursday and Friday, because the Poana was a little longer, and you saw a lot of balls bouncing like basketballs, but that's the price you pay with Poana Green. So if they're serious about this, I think they have to make the only way to reduce the green speed is to let the grass get a little longer, and I don't know if they're willing to do that on a Sunday, so...
And put the pin placements in reasonable positions. I mean, when I looked at this sheet when I came in yesterday morning and saw how many of these pin placements were near the edge, I mean, I knew it was going to virtually be impossible in the afternoon. We're talking to Gary Van Sickle, Morning Read contributor, president of the Golf Writers Association of America. We are going to take a couple of calls here at 1-877-337-6666. Let's say good morning to Rob from Lake Success. Good morning, Rob. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Listen, thank you. This is a long time coming. And I got a book here, A Passion for Golf. In 10 years ago, I came out to the Vineyards, and my group won the tournament. I guess your outing, and I still have a BlackBerry, believe it or not. It's amazing how many
Are you trying to make me feel older than I am?
Well, listen, go back to the beginning, and so do I. But it was a pleasure meeting you back then, and getting an opportunity. Listen,
and you still have a copy of the book, A Passion for Golf: Celebrity Musings About the Game.
And I wrote down, the date, and we shot 15 under that day. But we played best. I think it was best ball or four man, whatever format it was back then. But here's the point that I think with Phil. All right. Look, I've been playing golf my whole life, as you have, and this is absolutely despicable what he did. I mean, this is such bush league for a guy who the fans act like they love him. I mean, they do love him. And, this comes across to me as a guy who really had a meltdown, okay? He basically threw a tantrum, man. He threw a tantrum out there. And in golf, if you remember, I'm watching the tournament, and I got to kick up to tomorrow. I think there's going to be a tomorrow playoff. Which would be kind of fascinating because it's so bunched up, all of these.
There's no tomorrow playoff.
Oh, there is no. There,
no, no, they got rid of that. It all ends today.
Here's the thing with just basically with Phil pulling this off, it definitely is going to taint his record as far as what he's all about in my opinion, because there's no need for this. And let me ask you a question. I heard a caller yesterday, and this is maybe for your guest. Unpl- playable rule. I heard a caller on one of the other talk shows. Could he have just called the ball unplayable and taken a one-shot penalty if he would have let the ball roll all the way down?
Yes.
That was something that was discussed. And Chris Moore, I don't think he understood the rule or understood the guy who brought it up. So that is something that cannot be done.
Gary, do you want to answer that?
I'm not aware that you can't declare, you can declare a ball unplayable at any time. You would have to either, your option would go back and replay the shot, which you really wouldn't want to do, but he wouldn't have been able to move the ball. He could have moved back on his line, I guess. But other than that, you know, if he declares it unplayable, well, he had three options. He could replay the shot. He could declare it unplayable where it ended up, and then get two club lengths from there, or he could move back as far as he wanted on the line with keeping the pin in the line. But the best option would have been to replay the shot by hitting the putt. So, but it wasn't a good, you know. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me that he thinks that, you know, the penalty point, the two-stroke penalties, was going to be worse than what he would have scored if he had finished the hole properly. Anyway, Gary, I really appreciate you coming on. We do have a fourth round, final round today here at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, a four-way tie for the lead. Dustin Johnson at plus 777, highest score by a 54-hole leader since Gil Morgan's third round 77 in 92 at Pebble Beach. I'm sure you remember that as well. Lots to talk about. I wish we could just focus on the players and you know, how they're enduring such a challenging golf course and conditions. But obviously these other controversies have kind of taken over today. But I appreciate your insight as always, and I'll see you when you get out here.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ann.
Gary Van Sickle from Morning Read and president of the Golf Writers Association of America. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to another very good friend of mine, Dave Marr, who is a member here at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club and who's working with Fox this weekend as well. So stay where you are. We're talking golf with Ann Liguori.
In case you haven't heard, New York cops are hosting meetings in local neighborhoods to find out what's it going to take to make us all feel safer. They want to know what we think, so why not tell them?
We hear more negative things about the police than positive things. So off the bat, once we, you know, cross path with a police officer, we automatically got our guards up. And that's the problem. That's the issue. I feel like neighborhood policing is a good idea only if the community can have, like, some type of dialogue with the police or communication where they cross path, it'll be, like, no issues, no problems. Like, we don't fear each other.
A meeting in every neighborhood. It's all about your safety, your neighborhood, your voice. Will you be there?
Let's have some type of communication. Like, let me tell you how I feel about you, and you guys tell me the true definition of a police officer.
Go to buildablock.nyc to find your neighborhood meeting, paid for by the New York City Police Foundation.
So, confession cam on me. I've got a bit of a reality TV thing. I'm a total sucker for watching wealthy adults act like spoiled children, wilderness survival challenges, crazy cupcake competitions, or any show where someone says, "I'm not here to make friends." Never gets old. And since I got my wireless plan from AT&T, I get 60 of my favorite channels of live TV for a year on them, which means I can totally vote off that old cable bill of mine. Like, for real. So if you're like me and you like watching people flip houses, cook up a storm, sing their hearts out, and make some very questionable relationship choices in front of millions of people, you just gotta get AT&T.
Get more from your wireless plan. Buy wireless from AT&T and get live TV on us. More for your thing. That's our thing. Limited time New York Metro offer. Requires a new line on an eligible plan, which starts at $75 per month and DirecTV Now $35 package. After 1 year, DirecTV Now renews at full price unless canceled. Eligibility and restrictions apply. See att.com/live TV on us for details.
I'm a one-trick pony. Literally. I show up at kids' parties and act cute. That's pretty much it. So excuse me for being bitter when GEICO says not only could we save you money on car insurance, but we do more. Like give you 24/7 access online, over the phone, or even via our award-winning mobile app. Well, ooh la la. Aren't they multi-talented? Hey, I said organic carrots.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Industrial space is difficult to find and even harder to consummate a deal for, whether it be land, warehouse, shop space, or office. One Stop has 31 industrial parks conveniently located throughout the five boroughs, no more than 15 minutes to Manhattan. Their flexible agreements allow for same-day renting where you choose the space, you choose the terms. Extricating and expanding made simple. Visit onestopspaces.com for more information and locations, or call Alan at 718-786-8400. One Stop. It's the modern way to rent industrial space. Brokers welcome.
Open a money market account at Bethpage Federal Credit Union with as little as $500 at an awesome rate. Visit lovebethpage.com or stop by any branch.
WFAN 2020. Good morning at 7:40. This is John Minko. The Yankee toast for the series sweep of the Rays today at the stadium, and it's Old Timers Day. Whitey Ford, Reggie Jackson in the group attending, Don Larson as well. On Saturday, Luis Severino, his 10th win, home runs Gary Sanchez, Giancarlo Stanton, Aroldis Chapman to save. The Yanks have won 13-16. The Rays have scored just one run in 21 innings. So 4-1 victory for the Yanks yesterday. Susan Waldman, Sweeney Murdy live from the stadium shortly after 11 o'clock this morning on The Fan with the special Old Timers Day show. CC Sabathia will make the start today. Yankee pregame at 1:25 on The Fan and the first pitch at 2:05. Mariners beat the Red Sox 1-0 last night. Second straight win for Seattle over Boston. The Astros have won 10 straight as they beat the Royals 10-2. Houston a half game ahead of Seattle atop the division. Mets with a victory in Arizona 5-1. Here's what happened. Michael Conforto had a home run and drove in four runs, a three-run home run in the second inning, RBI double in the sixth, and Steven Matz with 6 2/3 innings of run-run ball as he picks up the victory. Elsewhere on the National League scoreboard, Pirates beat the Reds 6-2, Phils 4, Brewers 1, the Padres fall to Atlanta 1-0, Cubs 6, Cards 3, and the Dodgers dumping the Giants 3-1. It was the Tigers taming the White Sox 7-5, Oakland over the Angels 6-4, Twins outscored the Indians 9-3, Texas takes Colorado 5-2, Marlins 5, Orioles 4, and Washington loses to Toronto 2-0. Four-way tie for the lead. Final round of the U.S. Open in Southampton later on. Daniel Berger, Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka, and Dustin Johnson all at 3 over par. The Lynx beat the Liberty 85-71. Connecticut Sun losing to the Phoenix Mercury 89-72. With reports every 20 minutes, this is John Minko, WFAN 2020 Sports.
This is John Sterling. Join us for Yankees Old Timers Day coverage this morning beginning at 11 with Yankees Hall of Famers Whitey Ford and Reggie Jackson among the many Bomber greats in attendance. And later on, it's the Yanks and Tampa Bay Rays at 2:05 to wrap up their weekend series. It's all here on your flagship station for the New York Yankees, The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN and WFAN FM New York.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. Glad you can join me where I will be every Sunday morning from 7 to 8 until September 2nd. And I hope you're having a great day so far. Happy Father's Day. Should be beautiful. The sun is out right now. A little cooler temperatures out here in the Hamptons than I heard John say in the city, obviously. It's supposed to get up to, 81 degrees at 2 p.m. That's great. It's about 69 right now. And, boy, you never know with the winds and the weather out here. It could be absolutely gorgeous in, say, the village of West Hampton and pouring in the village of Southampton and way windier in Bridgehampton than it is in Southampton. I mean, the weather patterns, because you have the Peconic Bay and the Atlantic Ocean and the Long Island Sound, we are surrounded, obviously, by water out here. And so it really does affect the weather patterns and the wind. And joining me now, who knows a lot about the weather patterns out here on the east end of Long Island, dear friend Dave Marr, who's a member here at Shinnecock and is working for Fox this weekend. Good morning, Dave. Thanks for being one of my first guests on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.
Morning, Ann. It's a privilege to be one of your first guests. And the only thing I really know for certain about weather on the east end of Long Island is it's always sunshine around Ann Liguori.
Well, thank you. I try to keep everybody smiling, that's for sure. Listen, Dave, you're a member here, and I would really love to hear your thoughts about the course yesterday and how the wind dried out several of the greens and the difficult, the difficulty of the pin placements and, you know, the players complaining that the USGA just lost the golf course.
Well, not speaking for the club, just speaking for someone whose first U.S. Open was, 44 years ago at Wingfoot. I think Mike Davis got it 100% correct when he said that it was a tale of two golf courses, early and late. I'll take you back to Friday when we were sitting and doing our featured groups work for Fox Sports. It was raining out on the golf course, very cold out there, and raining pretty hard. And the weather report, AccuWeather, had it as 0% chance of rain. So basically on Friday they got fooled by the rain, and on Saturday they got fooled by the wind. And that's what Mike Davis said. They set the golf course up as much, as close to the edge as you possibly can, try and give a championship test to these great golfers. The scores in the morning indicated it. Some guys who were playing well shot good numbers. Some guys who couldn't control their golf ball didn't shoot good numbers. That's what a U.S. Open is supposed to do. But when you're on that tightrope, like Philippe Petit, if he's walking across a tightrope, if the winds, instead of being a gossel 7 miles an hour to up to 12 miles an hour, go to anywhere between 20 and 30 miles an hour, now at that point, Petit's got a problem with a tightrope, USGA has a problem with Shinnecock Hills setup, and then those borderline hole locations become over the edge. And Mike Davis, again yesterday, admitted to it, that some of those locations they had were just too difficult for the winds that ended up picking up that no one could expect, no one had forecast. And if you take a look at the leaderboard right now, the top nine players include four U.S. Open winners and two other major champions. The only players in the top nine that are not major championship winners, that haven't shown that they know how to get it done on a venue and a setup like this, were players that went out early in the morning. Berger and Finau were the seventh group out yesterday. And Afi Bonrat, also early in his round yesterday. They got a chance to take care of the condition or to get their business done in the conditions that allowed them to score well because they matched with the forecast. The winds just got up, and you know out at Shinnecock, when that happens, it can very, very quickly dry out the golf course. And one that's on the edge, some of those hole locations can end up being unfair. And truly unfair just means that a good shot is not rewarded. It's penalized as a bad shot is as well. So look to the USGA. Last night they put more water on the golf course than they typically would have thought than you might see in a typical U.S. Open. And today you won't see hole locations that are as much of a test because they don't want it to get away from them. Shinnecock and the USGA, I'm sure, speaking more for the USGA because I've spoken with the USGA at length this whole week, they want the test. They don't care about what it is in relation to par. They want guys to go out there and get a fair test and have the best shots be rewarded and the best player be crowned their champion.
Yeah, listen, everybody is trying to do the best job they can, right? And it's so hard to predict. But with all the instruments, with all the new technology that they were talking about having, and you know, even during my reports, Dave, in the morning, I was paying a lot of attention to the forecast, and there was, you know, it was pretty blatant that the forecast for the winds was 20 mile an hour gusts in the afternoon. It was pretty clear. But, you know, and do you put the pin placements on the edge like that when you know about the potential for these strong winds? That's the question. You had talked about Daniel Berger and Tony Finau playing in the morning. They shot 466s. They moved up 45 spots on the leaderboard to finish tied for one after 54 holes. I mean, unbelievable. When Berger finished his round yesterday at 2:19 in the afternoon, he was tied for 11th. When Finau finished his round at 2:58 in the afternoon, he was tied for 12th. And at the end of the day, you know, they find themselves tied for the lead at 4 under. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. It's something where, again, you're going to have a situation, regardless of the setup and how less, let's say, difficult the setup is, as they try and make it fair. Shinnecock is just simply going to dry out as the day goes on. So however moist and scoreable it is in the morning, the afternoon, when the best golfers in the world, these are the best golfers in the world, came together this week, these are the best of those who are playing as well as they can this week. When they hit the first tee, the course is just going to be more difficult than it was in the morning. That's just a fact of seaside courses where they get dried out during the day. As the day progresses, those hole locations get more and more difficult. But the USGA is definitely going to make sure, I think, that those hole locations later on in the day are not going to be something that high winds will make unfair. Good shots are going to be rewarded. Bad shots are going to be penalized.
That's right. The first five groups' average score is 73.2. The last five groups, their score average 76.7. Unbelievable, right?
Yep, three-shot swing, and the first groups out were actually guys who were not playing as well this week as the last groups out. So you see the guys that are not playing as well this week scoring three shots better than the guys who are playing as well as anybody else in the world. It just shows you what happens on a course like that when the winds kick up and it comes up and really dries out the greens with hole locations that might not have been as well thought out on a few holes. And we're talking about three or four maybe that had people rolling their eyes and shots that are good not being rewarded better than shots that were bad.
Dave Moore, do you think what happened yesterday was close to what happened in 2004?
Not even close. And 2004, you saw wind gusts up to 20 mile an hour being forecast in the morning. I don't think they were forecast that early in the morning when they're cutting the hole location. And I think there was a hope that by the USGA that they had managed the golf course here much better than they had in 2004 with all of the technology that they have. I think they felt like those kinds of wind gusts could end up maybe impacting those hole locations. But what ended up happening was you had consistent breezes of high teens into the low 20s, and it just frankly dried out the course more quickly than the USGA anticipated and put them in that kind of position. In 2004, it was a completely different situation on the seventh hole. You knew you had wind coming out of the west. That blows down the hill at number seven. Not only is that going to dry out an exposed green, but it's also going to make any golf ball on that green indefensible. I mean, there's no way you can keep it on that green. People will put it into the front left bunkers to try and play up and out and not have a ball on the green. And it was going to end up getting blown off the golf course, basically. So I think that was just really one green that was savage. There were a few others that got away from them, but that was one where the USGA had a better handle on what was going to be going on that day and just took it over the edge. This one that tried to take it to the edge, and the edge moved on him, frankly.
That's right. Well said. Let's talk about Phil Mickelson, antics on 13 and his reaction to those antics. What are your thoughts about Phil?
I'm a big Phil Mickelson fan. He's done a whole lot for the game. It's difficult to criticize a guy who I've seen do so many good things for so many good people. But frankly, I think that was just a little bit of a temperamental snap. I know he doubled down and said it was a strategic move because he thought that he knew he had the two-shot penalty and he's going to fare better on his scorecard by taking the penalty and stopping the ball from going down. I don't buy it, to tell you the truth. But, you know, Phil has given a lot to the game. And when he's been runner-up six times and all anyone asks you all week long is about your runner-up finishes, and you spend the day going around the golf course, hearing people shower you with their affection, singing happy birthday, knowing you're letting them down by not having a good shot at winning this championship, letting yourself down. I think he was very frustrated and very just out of his normal realm. I've never seen him be disrespectful. I don't think he thought he was being disrespectful, but it was being disrespectful.
All right, let's take some calls. 1-877-337-6666. Jim from Connecticut. Good morning. You're on the Fan. How
good
are
morning,
you, Jim?
Ann. Good, Ann. How are you?
Say hi to Dave Moore.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Good. Great.
You know, I am so disgusted, not only with how Phil Mickelson handled himself yesterday, but the attitude of golfers today in general. It seems as if they're so spoiled week after week going out and dominating these golf courses, shooting 15 and 20 under, which they do because they're so good and their equipment is so good. When they're faced with a difficult course under difficult conditions, they want to cry and complain. And this is one reason why I can't watch the PGA Tour on a week-to-week basis. And I know this may sound unpatriotic, but today I'm going to be rooting for Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson because it seems as if the foreign golfers do the less whining and the less complaining of them all because they're so used to playing under hellacious conditions in England and Scotland and Ireland.
Well, thanks for your call, Jim.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. You know, we all thought Rory would do well because he obviously grew up in Northern Ireland, Dave Marin. You know, Rory didn't make the cut, just struggling at these U.S. Opens. Let's talk about the field, obviously. What are your thoughts about I picked Justin Rose to win before this championship even started, and his up and down, his short game yesterday was just phenomenal. I mean, in just crazy intense conditions all week. He's consistent. He's mentally tough. I think Justin Rose came in more confident than anybody I saw. This caller thinks Justin Rose or Henrik Stenson, you know, are the guys that can handle these kinds of wins and these kinds of conditions better. And, you know, both of them have the temperaments to win, obviously, majors, and they have. What are your thoughts?
Well, Justin Rose is a class act, just a gentleman from start to finish, has been to do this. A teenager, an amateur at the Open Championship. And Jim from Connecticut, all I can say about the whiners in the game, it's not limited to Americans. Have you ever met Ian Poulter? I'll leave it right there. So at the end of the day, yes, there's a little bit of pampering going on with PGA Tour players. But when I was a kid and my parents spanked me, boy, I pouted for a little while. That's all we got. It's the temperamental kids here pouting because they couldn't play the way they typically like to, but it's the U.S. Open, and they're being tested to their utmost degree. I would say that the difference in what the conditions that Europeans play under versus Americans has been overrated over the years, or has sort of diminished over the years. Frankly, the conditions on the European Tour are much, much better than it used to be. Many European Tour players, or European players, playing more on the PGA Tour, so they're used to the conditions over here as American players. And just go ask Colin Montgomery, which I do every time it rains. I go up to Colin and I say, hey, this must be your kind of weather, Scottish. You love this. And he always looks at me and laughs. He says, give me 75 and sun. I'm a human being before I am a Scot. And he hates playing in that weather just as much as American players. So I'm not sure that it favors Justin. What favors Justin is his ball striking, his toughness, and his putting. And, boy, put those things together, and he may win another U.S. Open. And it would be a good thing if he does. He's a great guy and will be a worthy champion on a Shinnecock Open.
Well, we're in for an incredible day. I mean, anybody can win, right? I mean, look at this leaderboard. I mean, Daniel Berger, Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka, the defending champion. He's been playing phenomenal, and this is after he had, you know, that wrist injury for so long. He's come back, and he's doing so well. Dustin Johnson just seems unflappable, just, you know, fairways and greens. I mean, yesterday, if that's his bad round yesterday, I mean, he could just be, again, superb today. Who are you picking, Dave Moore?
I'm with you, JR. We'd love to see him end up winning. Brooks Koepka, yeah. Seeing Brooks become only the second player in 60 years, second player since Hogan, to successfully defend. Curtis Strange, the only guy to do that. That would be something else. It's just going to be fun to watch all day long.
And if Justin Rose wins, he will be the only Englishman to have won two U.S. Opens. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. And I hope to see you out here at Shinnecock playing when the conditions are less tough than these.
You play there more than I do, so you know better than anyone. See you soon, Ann. Thanks so much.
I really appreciate it, Dave Moore. Thanks so much. Well, boy, I just wanted to tell you about the Metropolitan Golf Writers Association 67th National Awards Dinner, which is happening actually tomorrow night at Westchester Marriott. Padraig Harrington will be getting the Gold Tee Award, which is our organization's highest honor. Justin Thomas will be getting and his family will be getting the Family of the Year Award. Carol Semple Thompson will be getting the Distinguished Service Award, the Amateur Legend. And Morgan Hoffman will be getting the Mary B. Porter Award, you know, the former Oklahoma State All-American who was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. Hank Gola, our buddy in journalism, is also getting the Journalism Award. And Fresh Meadow Country Club will be getting the Club of the Year Award. So if you want to go to the dinner, we'd love to have you. Tickets are available at metgolfwriters.org. Well, my thanks to Gary Van Sickle, to Dave Marr, to John Minko, and to Kara Ann Galante in the studio. Great job, Kara Ann. Appreciate you working with me on this very first Talking Golf with Ann Liguori show. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'd love to hear from you on Twitter at Ann Liguori, Instagram, The Ann Liguori, and on Facebook. Enjoy the final round. Happy Father's Day. And I'll talk to you next Sunday morning from 7 to 8 right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.